because
very liberal. North Carolina.
No, no. Thespian, one of them had recently had her son killed in Iraq, and she appeared to be happy about it because
she was proud
that she was walking around smiling, talking about how he had defended our freedom, and this and my mom's husband, who's very Republican, was just sickened. And I've never seen that reaction from him.
Did you see
so
that
I think that's who you meet when you travel.
Did you see the New York Times yesterday? They had the photographs of 900 GIs killed in Iraq this year. And then they interviewed parents. And most of the parents said they opposed the war, although they were proud of their sons, you know?
Right.
Did you want to order? Do you want to wait a bit? Or what? I know you've been
here. We got a light turnout today.
Okay.
It's actually kind of nice.
We're the anonymous workshop.
Are we really anonymous?
They're the identity workshop. We're the anonymous.
Oh, there you go. That's right. Excellent.
We have no identity. Yeah, except by the food. Okay, Jeremy, you know what you want. Go.
Well, I was actually going to ask what went down for specials. I'm starting to get off my as usual. So I didn't even look.
Okay, tofu scramble.
Okay.
The handmade tofu. It has eggplant, gypsy peppers.
Right?
Yes.
Handmade.
It comes with hash browns.
He wants to know if it has tofu in the tofu scramble.
Yes. So I'm thinking maybe not.
Probably good.
Not tofu-y. The malawak, have you tried that? That's the Yemenite bread.
No.
Anti-Zionist food.
But yeah. You
it's,
know what?
It's very nice.
I want you to bring back that wild mushroom omelet.
You like that? I know we had that for a bit.
I saw something. I'm going to ask for a mushroom omelet. Mushroom omelet.
The regular mushrooms? I'll see if he has any fancy ones back there, but I don't know.
A little spinach in there.
Okay.
And then, yes.
Yes. I forgot to look at the wheat toast, too. I should do that.
That's fine. I can't start it.
You like wheat as a preference? You have it?
I like them both. I actually
end up
being full
selection
to get the toast.
Okay.
I like
sesame bagel cheese.
That's very good. They have really good salami. They have very good salami.
All right.
Yeah.
I guess I will.
It's kosher.
Okay.
Whatever that means.
So I should care.
No pig.
Well,
you should care?
Sylvia.
Yeah, it's part of your heritage.
Sylvia, it's
nothing.
Your turn.
Nothing.
I'll have salami and eggs, and I'll have sesame bagel with that.
And hash browns, right?
Sure.
I guess I go for this tofu scramble.
Okay.
I guess somebody got to order.
It's delicious. I had it the other day. It's really good.
Okay, that's good to know.
And do you like toast or bagel?
Toast.
If I have them all, I have rye, pumpernickel, wheat, challah, sourdough.
Right.
I'll try this special.
The cherry tomato?
Yeah.
And toast or bagel?
Wheat toast. Do you have that?
Yeah, this is an Arcos. ARCHOS.
What's that doing, Dave?
I'm going to explain it as soon as we finish ordering. Because it's a total opt-in thing, and I don't want to...
Did it get my sneeze? I don't know.
I got everything.
That's contagious.
All right, so I just wanted to say this is recording what we're saying. And the idea... Here, let me just get the screen activated so you can see. So, like, you see how as I'm talking, it's doing that? And then the meter is going, so it's been going for 3 minutes and 57 seconds, 58, now 4 minutes. And what I want to do with this is just turn it into a podcast. I have a podcast, and this is going to serve as the intro. It's called Morning Coffee Notes at www.morningcoffeenotes.com. And it is a long-running podcast. I've been doing it since June of 2004. Yeah, 2004.
Wait,
and
that's
every once
before there were podcasts.
Nope.
Really?
And no, there were podcasts in June 2004. And so every once in a while, I just like at a thing like this, I'll just take the thing out and put it on the table. And you'll forget that it's here very quickly. And was just since we have such a small group, and I just did one. We had a what would you call it? A meetup, I guess. At
Love-in.
Yeah, it was a love-in. Fellini's. It was actually it was a total milestone. Yeah, she did answer the email, by the way.
I got an email from her partner.
There you go. Oh, from the partner, really?
Yeah, who said it was incredible.
Yeah, we've discovered a basically a gold mine. Okay, not just a vein, okay, but a veritable gold mine here. And so, single women in Berkeley. Yeah.
Who think
that blogging is actually pretty cool. but don't know the first thing about it. And so we can teach them, you know. Fine. No problem.
Fellini's.
No, Fellini's has nothing to do with it. It's more the space defined by Sylvia, actually. It's wherever Sylvia happens to be.
Sylvia's network.
It is.
Sylvia Match.
Ever experience. Well, yeah.
You can make
expanding.
Yeah. Ladies lunch.
So anyway, so this is just, you know, I did a podcast at that one. I've done one on my birthday. I did one with my parents in a restaurant in Queens in New York.
So why didn't you become a doctor? We always wanted to.
No, my parents are actually quite happy with me now. It's amazing. You have to live long enough and, you know, get to a certain point and then they decide to let up on you. It's no longer a big issue. Yeah, it's finally.
What? No grandchildren?
Yeah, no grandchildren. My brother gave him the grandchildren. So. And so, yeah, I did that. And so those are the most favorite ones. They're just sort of like random personality things. Whoever showed up and whatever they had to say.
How much time did you spend editing that down?
Yeah. I spend absolutely no time
editing. Nothing. Listen to them.
It just goes straight through from beginning to end. In fact, if they have Wi-Fi here, I'm just going
to
upload it right from here. Because this thing has Wi-Fi, if you believe it or not. It's a wonderful little gadget. Anyway.
You're being podcast, Mabel.
Oh, cool. Yep. So you get to talk about your target markets. And
you, Dave Weiner, is my target market.
No,
I've heard that before. That goes over really, really big. Yeah, exactly. I don't want to have an identity. I just want to be Mabel's target market.
You're
my target market. Give me five. Okay, I forgive you.
So what's happening? Are we doing a podcast?
Yeah.
How's the microphone
over? Not so great, so you kind of do have to speak up. It's right here.
It's built in.
It's built in. Yeah, I could have brought one with me, but that sort of takes the spontaneity out of it.
I'll admit that I finally listened to my first podcast yesterday.
Wow.
I downloaded Make Magazine's weekly, daily.
That's a good one, yeah.
But what I was really surprised from, knowing that it was coming from O'Reilly, was how poor the quality of the editing was.
What do you think the editing should be?
Just starting off with levels.
Really?
So the announcer was at one level, and then when they started doing the phone conversation, I'm like, whoa, and I crank up the stereo in the car and listen, and the announcer come back on, and it's good blast. it was super disparate.
Are you a radio person? Or?
I am, and I think NPR does a decent job when they're doing like Talk Nation, the caller comes in. But even then, I wish they boosted a little bit.
Right. Well, radio people say stuff like that, but it's the spontaneity of it. It's the ease of production. Consider it. It's a one or zero thing. You wouldn't get it if it required production.
But there's also, I think.
In other words, you just wouldn't get it.
I think even with iTunes, there's some function where you come through and say, take all my songs and I make them all at the same level. Or look at all the songs, see what level they record at, and average everybody out.
It may be that the next generation of the Arcos or whatever we use to do these things will have the software that can level it out.
I mean, it's certainly easy if you're just at this point taking that file and uploading it. Man, that's a no-brainer.
That's all I'm going to do.
But even if you had a studio, not you particularly, but somebody's doing a podcast like that, I would just imagine they'd toy with it a little bit.
No, I don't know. If I had a studio, then I would have to have people working in the studio, I guess, right?
Yeah, well, I guess.
And then I'd have to pay them to do that. And
I know, there needs to be some software. I like there should be a software that can just modulate all the...
Or you can deal with it. Turn the volume up. I mean,
I did that. I was doing it the whole time in the car. And there's another thing, too. You know, they were very proud to say, you know, this interview was conducted over Skype. I'm like, yeah, but I can't understand what the guy's saying. There's no reason that you shouldn't run a pop filter through there just to clear out some of the
I've tried to listen to it's podcasts.
It's just
one of them is so messed up.
I know
the guy who was controlling it and operating it was just screwing up. And I think the software was screwing up.
Oh, okay, great.
What do you say,
I know
Jeff?
It's kind of the early days of the expansiveness of the media.
Streaming media claims my whole attention, right? It's very hard. You know, that's less true with radio. I think it's more true with video. But the sort of claim of my attention that I get from something that's streaming that I can't scan and I can't turn away from quickly and I don't know what's going to happen 3 minutes later because I can't scroll through it quickly.
Yeah, that's also
sort of like a
that's a fact too. That's one of the things that shows up all the time. As a producer of podcasts, so you see, I like the fact that you can't skim it. That means that you have to listen to me.
You well, like the outliner, Dave.
Yes, Nina, Dave, the outliner.
Exactly.
I have found that people are, I mean, I blog, right? And I find that the level of comprehension amongst people who read my blog is so low that it's just. They're all skimming. That's all they ever do. Mm-hmm. So what they do is they catch the buzzwords, right?
Yeah.
And they don't have any idea what you're actually saying. They get the nouns, but they don't get the verbs, right?
Mumble,
CSS. That's so. For me, they're just looking for whatever I say about CSS, and they assume that I hate it. And even if I were to say, and I've tried this experiment, okay? Even if I were to say, CSS is the greatest technology that's ever come along, and where would we be without CSS? The male is still going to say, you motherfucker. You know, why do you hate CSS? And why, when are you ever going to get off this? And I go, whoa! You know, I don't think you ever actually read what I wrote. You know?
Is it automated at both ends? They just automatically trigger the emails?
Yeah, maybe. Although Mac users are starting to get a little bit better. And I've found that I can criticize the Mac even without getting any flames at all now.
People are so used to being criticized as Mac users.
Really?
Is there a problem with the entire media?
With what medium?
With having, I mean, the whole concept of a blog and having people respond to it.
I don't think so. I mean, you can live within its constraints.
Okay.
In other words, if you know that people skim, then you have to sort of keep your statements very, very short and very concise and make the verbs very big and the nouns very small.
Or write really well that it captures people and
some
makes them want to read.
There you go. And the word of mouth, if you can get the word of mouth to carry the idea correctly, then you're doing fine, you know. But the podcasts help because the people that really care about what you have to say now can take it with them. It's portable, right? Mm-hmm. And they can go with you when you're driving
if you were commuting
around.
Commuting by car, I would be a lot more interested.
And or how about going for a walk every day? You know, I do that. I don't commute by car, but I go for a walk every day. So.
I saw something really funny the other day, which was several people commenting on a podcast that I think Gilmore Gang did on attention.xml and attention trust. And 80% of the comments were, man, this is so boring. You couldn't keep my attention. This is the best podcast
that has
ever
been made. Uh-oh. They'll love that one. That's great.
Kind of, not so good.
I like editors.
Yeah, I think the Gilmore Gang is slipping, for sure. It used to be one of my favorites.
Well, it's kind of sad with the topic extension.
Yeah, no kidding. It is ironic, isn't it?
Well, it's hard to fill that many hours with good stuff. I mean, production.
I don't agree, actually. They were just, they had a certain chemistry with the group of people that they had. And it didn't matter what they talked about. They could be talking about stupid crap, you know, it didn't matter. It was sort of the nice thing to just be able to connect up with those personalities once a week, you know. It's kind of like a cereal. Anyway.
Which I don't listen to either.
Well, there's a shift too. It's going to be interesting now with the video iPod coming out.
The Kino.
Or out.
Oh, that's what I missed.
Is that you've got people who've been writing.
Awesome.
And now also you're going to try talking.
Are you going to tech
and you can only imagine. And
when is that?
They did out their little video cam.
Yeah.
Oh, it is?
And they're, I think, pretty different sets. I mean, it often
I better go.
Yeah. Okay.
Do you know I own the domain techcamp.com?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I do.
Yeah,
I do.
When
it
done.
Is good. Hi, I'm Dave. I don't think we've ever met. Have we met?
Audio and video.
Your name
really
is?
Hard.
I'm
Mary
so
Beth. I think we
so
have
good.
Met.
People are like, oh, this is terrible.
Yeah.
Oh, which one's really the M and which one's the M?
That one.
That's a good one.
So to be so
how about the orange and the chocolate? The blue and the red?
You're not exactly chocolate, though. You're more licorice.
Yeah. It's
kind of I'm just being technical.
Sure.
Yeah. More production stuff.
Anise, right?
That's funny. It's kind of what print design, web design, and everything.
everything.
Did you go to TechCrunch?
Yeah, ransom note video was going to be the thing.
Yeah, I flagged that. I went. I just flagged about the identity workshop.
Oh, yeah. Is that over with?
No, it's still going on. You can. I'm going to go there after this. You're welcome to come and drop in.
So that's the best they give you?
They're talking about establishing a universal identity system for the internet, and they've got businesses and
here, let me move this over here so we can get this on. This is Rain's Cone.
Hi there.
Tell them about what you're telling me.
Oh, well, I just went last night to poll worker training. I'm going to be a judge in the upcoming elections. That's
no
one rank lower than inspector, but my sweetie Betsy will be the inspector.
So you report to her? You're the judge.
She's the one who's authorized to call the police if there are shenanigans going on.
Really?
Yeah.
So we don't want to see any shenanigans then?
No, but after working for 16 hours, who knows what's possible.
That's awesome.
Starting at 6 a.m. But it's fascinating, just the 3 hours of training, and they had a really good, really effective instructor.
That's a good one.
Designed to make it understandable to people with a wide range of skills and interests. This, how to use this technology, these electronic voting machines, and it's sort of magic incantations. They don't explain how it works, but one of the people training with us was clearly trying out all the ways to hack the machine to get the reassurance that, you know, what the likely problems are and what the points of vulnerability.
That looks like a very official document you've got there.
Oh, yeah, this is sort of a digested version of all the key laws related to making elections fair, safe, and free. And we're doing it to make them fun.
How did you decide to do this?
Well, I've done last year. I did Get Out the Vote work. I actually went to Flagstaff for the election in a swing state nearby, and organized a bus trip. We called it Democracy Turtle Soup. Chartered a green tortoise as part of the Stone Soup community I'm in, and had 30 of us.
I went to
Flagstaff and did the Get Out the Vote type work. This time it seemed like there's the opportunity in a not majorly contested election to get involved at a different level, nonpartisan, understand the system from the inside a bit better.
That's great.
It's very illuminative as to how broken it is and how bad some of the procedures are. The amazing thing is that it works as well as it does, but there's just so many complexities and things that are that you have to do that somebody could easily do wrong that could lead to not an error in the counting, but the could affect how it's perceived. So much is about just the appearance of propriety. The Caesar's wife scares. So I'm not going to be wearing my Ask Me About Co-Housing button, even though there's no co-housing measures on the ballot, just so that people don't get
it. It's not fair for you to do that, right?
Yeah. Well,
you're supposed to be neutral.
Right, but this isn't an election issue, but it's just, you know, to be entirely neutral, there to help people. And it's,
so is this something you've been doing your whole life?
Well, I've been doing, you know, community development, you know, from when we met, 25 years ago? Quarter century, isn't that scary?
Ridiculous.
Building computer user groups. You know, back then, in New England Apple Tree, which Mitch was president of, and New England Apple Kids. And then I came out to Berkeley.
Mitch was from Newton?
New England Apple Tree. He was president.
The what Apple Tree?
New England.
New England, sorry.
Yes.
I thought you said Newton.
From Newton. Right? Yeah, I started the Newton Apple Kids, which Dan Bricklin enrolled his son in before he was born. From experience there, helped start, along with Reese Jones, Berkeley Mac User Group, which grew to more than 10,000 members, and I dropped out of Berkeley. Twice in order to pursue that. And it's really been guerrilla marketing, building communities. This is in line with that.
That's you.
Working the system. And now in building real world communities, co-housing.
I think I have to pause this while I eat.
Yes.
We'll be back soon, everybody.
Well, I'm in transition to figure out what's my next move is.
Okay.
So this is a story.
The other night, Dave wanted to throw a party for all his friends
for
in
Scoble.
The Bay Area. For
Scoble.
It was for Scoble. He didn't show up until halfway. Okay. So anyway, I booked Fellini's, and I get there, and there are about 40 guys there. There are no women. And Dave podcasts me and goes, Sylvia, how come there are no women here? And I go, I don't know.
Well, I asked her because she had just done a blog post about that, about Web 2.0.
Right.
This was like a hot topic, and it got much discussed in her blog. So.
And I usually don't notice these things, but I'm the only woman with 40 guys, right? So I notice. And he said, what are you going to do about it? And I said, I don't know.
I don't think I actually said that.
Yes, you did.
I listened to the
podcast. And he goes, what are you going to do about it? So I'm looking around at the other part of the restaurant, and I spot two attractive women, both blondes, and I think, I'm just going to invite them to the party. So I go over to their table, and they're just finishing their meal, and they're both very attractive.
This is pure Sylvia, total
and
Sylvia.
I grab their bill. The waiter just gave them their bill. I says, I'm going to treat you to your dinner if you come over and join me.
Hear that part. Oh, wow, that is smart. That is smart.
I just said, I'm the only woman in this crowd of very intelligent, vibrant man.
Oh,
I said I just feel lonely, and I would love to have you join me.
Actually, they feel lonely too.
You need a woman to sell women, basically.
And then they were surprised but delightfully so, and they said, sure, we'll go. And so they just followed me, and I introduced them to Dave, and he was talking to him for a while, and then Mark Canner came up and said, who are you talking to?
Yeah,
right. But anyway, they stayed for a while. Then one of them just emailed me to thank me for inviting them and said it was a great, random, spontaneous thing to do, and they hope to see these guys again.
Yeah. Well, we'll make sure that happens.
So there's
no doubt about that.
There's a story.
The,
you didn't know I'd pay their dinner.
No, but I think
everyone,
that's great.
It was like, you know, 50 cents a piece.
It was totally worth it. The mother lived part of it was that she said, well, there are lots of us. And you're kidding. Oh, that's Nina for you. No, it doesn't matter. I mean, see, the thing is, the myth is that the men don't want gender balance in these events. But in fact, most, or I can't speak for most, but it's not true. I mean, I don't like male only events. I think they're boring. I hate walking into a room and just seeing men. I mean, that's all, you know. Okay, great. But that's what life is like in the tech industry. So it's a good thing to sort of do something about that.
So where is your gold mine location you discovered?
Where is it?
What is the gold mine that you mentioned?
Oh, it's women. Are you kidding?
No, you said it was a specific location.
No, I didn't mean to imply that you go somewhere and then... No, I mean, but there's a method to it.
You need a publicist.
A publicist.
No, I need a friend with a big heart who wants everybody to be happy. It's my friend Sylvia.
A
wonderful person.
When other people
an
are happy,
agent provocateur.
I'm happy.
Exactly.
When I see something like that, I wonder about what's the bias built into it, like the RSVP system or the way that the word spread.
No, but it's the industry. I was talking to Kim Cameron of Microsoft yesterday, and I was commenting on the lack of women at the identity workshop too. And he said at Microsoft it's terrible. He said there are almost no women engineers. And he said it makes it Microsoft a really dull place for him.
It's not fun, right?
He said he used to work in another industry and there were women, and he just accepted that as normal. Then he went to Microsoft and it was like entering a monastery.
Yeah.
You know?
It leads to very sort of dull kind of thinking.
The designers are men.
We're going to solve it. We're going to crack this one. And it'll change our whole way of looking at things.
Most women, 5'2".
I mean, we're ready for it, too, because the things that we're doing are literate. They're no longer just technological. I mean, we're writing. That's what we're doing.
That's right. Blogger. Look at Blogger. I mean, attracted all these women. I mean,
I've been out of country.
Women are part of the scene.
I feel like I'm missing, but
again,
we need more.
Yeah.
When I got my first product out the door about a year ago, the woman artist, a friend of mine, helped me on it, had a newborn baby, and it completely dictated when he could work. You know, like, the baby's hungry, I can't talk now. And I was just thinking that a normal company, this would never happen. I mean, he just would not be able to work at a normal company. So it was a really interesting influence on the whole product. It wouldn't happen unless you're independent.
I don't think a woman should have to work when she has a newborn.
No, but she wanted to. She wanted to. It actually provided a distraction.
It's like whenever I go to IKEA. Okay.
But it wasn't a tremendous amount of work. It was maybe 10 or 20 hours a week. And it was usually from about 10 p.m.
What company was it?
10 p.m. to 1 a.m. You know.
What company was that?
It's my little Mac software company. Bella Design Group.
You know, the interesting thing is, though, there are very few women in computer science and math. And rather, I had a client, the graduate computer science department at Mills College, and they were trying to attract women in the program. And I did publicity for them, and it ended up attracting men into the program. They admit men as well. And come to the realization, maybe women just don't like computer science. Maybe they don't like math. Maybe they are good at writing. They are good at communication. Why can't we, you know,
right,
work
you can
together?
Accept that, right.
Yeah, just accept it.
You don't have to fight the biggest battle that you can find. You can find a way around the battle, you know. I mean, there are differences between the genders. I mean,
there are.
Evolution raised men to be good at sitting, staring at things for long periods of time, waiting for something to move so that they could shoot it, you know? And I think
it's like writing code.
It's a lot like writing code. It's a very solitary, quiet activity. And it's like being, you know, like being in a cave, right?
Yeah.
Whereas women, you know, were responsible for the connections to the rest of the society, the civilization. And so women are good at connecting things together, connecting people together. I found that running a company, that there really were differences between men and women. You know, the company was large enough so that there really, you had, I mean, it's not true for every individual, but, you know, if a problem required sort of, you know, careful study and a breakthrough idea, that's something I might give to a man. If it required organizing a tremendous amount of details and making something happen that's really complicated, I'd give that to a woman. It's, you know, it's not likely, you know. Some people have different, whatever, you know. I'm talking for the podcast right now. I mean, I don't want to limit anybody, but, you know.
You'll get fan mail over that.
No, I think, in a way, Larry Summers was hitting on something that's a very important point.
That's why
he got so much flack for what he said. Because he said something that could be true. He said that there may be a biological reason for women not being as prominent in the sciences, in the hard sciences, as men are. And he got a lot of flack for that.
Yep.
Because he could be right. You know, maybe they'll discover some DNA that programs the brain to create algorithms, and that DNA is predominantly located in male brains and not women. And that'll authenticate Larry. What?
Autism is
a male. Yeah, but it would have to be a woman that said that. You see, that's the way things work.
Right, right.
It's not going to be something a man's going to get away with saying.
If that, well, even if a woman said it, she'd get a lot of flack too. But it would be more, I mean, people would listen.
It's kind of like Nixon opening up China.
Right.
If a Democrat had done it, it wouldn't have worked, but because a Republican did it. You know.
Right. So, yeah, the knee-jerk reaction of Larry Summers is what?
I think Larry Summers knew what he was doing, though.
No, that's true for music.
So why are all the technology industry parties 99% men and 1% women?
But anyway.
I mean, it's still a problem to solve. I mean, wow, that's an interesting observation. I guess you have a much better life. Women have much better lives than men, I guess. That's something I kind of believe that, actually. You know,
kind of laid back because they thought they were the speakers of the competition. So I don't think they were the user friendly. And also, they introduced
that's true. Computer scientists have to work all the time. And women don't want to work all the time. They want to have a life.
I don't know if that's true. I mean, I don't know if it's true that computer scientists have to work all the time. I also don't know that the Web 2.0 conference didn't happen during business hours. I kind of think actually it did. So, I mean, if it were the job, I mean, in other words, I think Sylvia was actually observing something that wasn't, like, trivial. I don't think there are that many women.
There aren't. It's true. In fact, I'm thinking of completely discontinuing Graceland because it's shrunk so much. It's like become irrelevant. Women who used to be in technology have taken their technical skills and they're assimilated in other sectors.
I think that's wonderful, actually. I think the whole reason for the technology industry to exist, it may have gone away. Maybe we don't need a technology industry.
Well, for women, it's true. It will come to a point where we don't need technology.
That's sort of what I was saying. That change the industry instead of trying to bring more women into this industry. To just change this industry to be something that is more useful, and then you won't have to worry about it. You know, merge with another industry.
I mean, it's sort of like if you had a convention of auto mechanics, how many would be women? How many women would you see there for auto mechanics? Like 0.001%, and yet no one criticizes the auto mechanic business because it's predominantly men, right?
Yep.
But there's sort of a bias about computer science. Why? Computer scientists, programmers don't get paid any more than a good auto mechanic does.
Well, I went in for a outpatient surgical procedure a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Every person that treated me, with one exception, and there were about 20 of them, were women.
Right.
The doctor was a woman, all the nurses were women, all the nurses' assistants were women. The only person, the only man there was the guy who wheeled people in and out in the wheelchairs. And he was one of the happiest guys you'd ever want to meet.
Was he on drugs?
No, he was young, and he had all this female energy around him. I mean, there's nothing better. I mean, you know, I felt very cared for. You know, for a guy, it was a wonderful experience. I mean, just being surrounded by all those women.
Well,
that's what their job was, actually, to care for you. And, you know, when the doctor called me up with the results of the surgery, I said to her, I never felt so well cared for. And, you know, it didn't hurt that she gave me good news, basically. So, I mean, that was nice, too. But yeah, no, I mean, there are professions that, yeah, I don't know. I just think that we can do a lot better than we're doing. And I think this is one way to do it. The tech industry, by being more balanced, more inclusive, by bringing more people into it, by taking down barriers. I mean, everywhere I look, that seems to be the problem with the tech industry, is that there are all these walls that people put up, and they think that when they're doing it, they're saving something for themselves that they don't have to share with anybody else. But what happens very quickly when you do that is the opportunity inside the walls dries up. things start happening because the technology industry only makes sense in the context of a larger world. We're only here to serve.
Serving both genders. And if
totally.
The people
that's half the world.
The people who build the tools are all male, all well in gender, then their tools might not work well with the other gender. So I think it is
yep.
very important.
Well, people who design cars are probably mostly men, but cars work pretty well for women, though.
No, the chief designer at Ford Motor Company is a woman.
No kidding, really.
And the reason they did it is, you know, Subaru started hiring women car designers, and then Ford Motor said, wait a minute, because Subaru cars sell so well for women.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
So what are some of the features you put in a car that women would appreciate?
They said mainly the features were ease of opening, like the doors were too heavy before, and they most manufacturers don't take into account how hard it is for a woman to open a car door and keep it open. You know, and also women are shorter than guys. Right? Look at Mabel. I mean, when she drives a car, she has to get a car that would basically fit a child.
Oh, excuse me. Yes. No. My last company, we did a lot of research on women consumers, and what. Yeah, 46% of cars are bought by women. This is 2000. And if you look at the automotive industry, they target the standard dummy. You know, they built for body types. It's about 5'9" male, 160 pounds, and that's what they build the feature set for. Then they added a woman dummy and a women's baby crack, you know, dummy. But most of the cars are built for that. And so if you take a look at that, I have to say, I don't buy a car unless I can breathe when I drive. Because most of the car, the seatbelts cut you off at the jugular because you're so much shorter. For you, no problem. It'll hit you across the chest. For a lot of women, those are contraindicated. You see, a lot of women actually lift the seatbelt down and put their arm over the seatbelt.
That's not good. You probably is not good.
You can crush your ribs in a car accident because, you know, the airbag. Their point is, you can't drive with a seatbelt cutting across your jugular because it's so outside. And yet, by law, you have to. So there's a lot of feature sets.
Do you know that there, in the 80s there was a company that started? It said that they were going to be a woman's software company. They were going to make software for women, and the backlash from women was unreal. The message was, "We don't want software for women. You know, we want software that works well."
Well, there was John Dvorak's famous piece about designing a Macintosh computer for a woman. It was a parody. And, you know, the computer was pink, it had a place for lipstick holders, you know.
Well, maybe now, maybe what didn't work in the 80s is now it's the right time to do it, right?
Well,
maybe,
I think the thing that
maybe everything has its time and place.
It does have a time and place, but, you know, one of my earlier companies, we looked at doing a personal organizer for women. Okay, this is before the poll came out. And we did a lot of focus groups with women, and we talked about the form factor and all the buttons and embedded menus. And they said, you know, we don't want any of that. What we want is a device with one button, and we want to just tell it what to do. We want it to be like, I need a mother. I need a wife. This is what they said. We need a wife. We need a wife that we can tell them what we want to do. And because as a woman, we manage three calendars, my husband's, mine, and my kids. Right? So the poll, most organizers only manage a singular person, right? So it doesn't work the way it works. So there's a lot of intuitive issues. It's not the color. It is certainly form factor. And a lot of women have long fingernails, so pushing the buttons doesn't work. And what a lot of people don't realize is, with the woman, your accessory goes in your purse, okay? So I have freaking 10 black things in my purse. I can't find anything. Everything's black on black. The phone
Let's
rings.
See.
Look, everything's black in here. Okay? So
I can't see anything. Maybe you need a purse with like a little light in there or something. Has anybody come out with that? Like a light, a purse light?
I had a gig at Red Rocks.
Really?
But you know, so I have to.
If you had a purse, yours would do that probably.
So there's the phone. But that's what it was designed. Women put it in the purses. Men put it on the hip pocket and they carry it on their
hip. No, not all men. I mean,
but a lot of men do.
That's the nerdy men put it on their hip. You know,
but
they,
you don't
the
have
inner
a purse.
Retentive. No, I don't.
And see, my a purse is the woman's curse. I gotta say
it
that.
Is, but you know, you end up, and my husband, yes, he gets mad at me all the time because my other phone doesn't have a cover, so something bumps against it, and I call him, and he gets a phone call from my purse. He gets it two or three times, and he goes, "Well, you put on the switch, and
yeah.
It's a key lock." But you know what? It's a pain in the butt to do, and I keep forgetting it's a pain because I answer the phone 20 times a day. Yeah, so he carries his phone. So the forfeit. So here's
a little pocket fob, you know.
And you know why they don't make?
That's another thing.
You know why they don't make pockets on women's clothes?
No, why?
Because it makes us look
fatter. Yep, I believe that.
That's why. So they don't have. You're sleeker if you don't have pockets.
Do you have any pockets?
Most women's clothes don't have
pockets. Like jeans
pockets.
Don't have pockets? Women's
no,
jeans?
The only pockets I have are in back.
They don't have side pockets?
Wait.
But women wear pants
yeah,
so tight. They don't
know,
even,
yeah,
they don't
really.
Want to look
fat. I would never put a
but that's your choice. It's not like they.
I
mean, you probably could buy them. Well, whatever. I don't know.
So here's an interesting thought.
If you don't want to buy them, then they're not going to make them, right?
Women are also susceptible to... You know, all the media and how you look. So here's an interesting thought. Somebody came back from Europe recently and they were talking about the iPods and how the next generation of kids, over in Europe they observed that a camera phone is an accessory and it's an outside external device. You carry it in your purse, you wear it around your neck or whatever. They noticed with the iPod that the iPod has become integrated into these younger kids, and everywhere they went they had earphones plugged in strung through their clothes,
yes.
And they had the iPod in their pocket, or in the purse, or in the lanyard, the little necklace, the nano, the little teeny ones, right? And what they noticed was that in the new generation, you wear an iPod. It is part of you. It's integrated in you. And there are actually fabric manufacturers who are coming up with clothing, fabric to conduct the signal better, so you can actually integrate it as a lifestyle device.
Right.
The phone and this is considered an external. And it's a really, it's, if you think about that from a generational standpoint, how people carry that digital.
So we've been talking about it in our generation for years. Computers you wear. I mean,
right.
Wearable computers
right.
Are on the hot top.
Well.
I know. But then
can
you always
can
wear
I wear
your
clothing
jackets,
that
right?
Will improve
so, yeah,
my self-concept?
Sure. Right. Right.
Wrong personality.
And here's the thing now. When you just talked about it. A lot of people don't wear watches because they have a phone.
Right, right.
So you don't need to wear watches. That's a generational shift.
I wear a watch.
Yeah, my son doesn't wear. My son says, why wear a watch? I got the time
exactly.
On my phone.
I got my cell phone. So I checked my cell phone. Like he wears it as a watch phone. Isn't that interesting? So we're in the middle of this huge...
Well, I wouldn't say wearing a watch is a huge thing.
No.
I mean,
no. It's
but there are changes for sure.
It's
absolutely.
Indicative.
Oh,
I normally don't wear a watch.
That's okay. You don't have to defend it. Mine's getting dust sitting somewhere. I don't even know where the hell it is.
And I haven't used an alarm clock in probably like 2 years.
Do you use that to wake you up? Or do you just wake up naturally?
Yeah, when I wake up, I...
When I wake up, he's in perpetual sleep mode. That's great. So tell us about Tag Camp. What's going to happen there?
I don't know what's going to happen there. That's the excitement.
Play tag?
It's another unconference. So the whole point is that the participants set the agenda. It's another form of an open space technology or similar. I haven't rechecked the blog in the last week. Just the initial people who were involved and the concept sounded interesting. And it's local and accessible, so what the hey.
It's all we can bring you.
Where is it?
Palo Alto, downtown. At somebody's offices.
And it's when? Starts tomorrow?
Starts tomorrow night, running overnight into Saturday evening.
They're about 40-50 people in the week.
Something like that.
Yeah. Looks interesting.
It's a lot of traditions of bar camp, which came from food camp. And
yeah, I'm going to college.
Dave's more involved than that.
I wasn't involved. I showed up there for a couple of hours. I don't know. It's a party, basically.
All these things are a reinvention of the original conference idea before it got subverted by the commercial big conference expo idea. And of the original user group concept. You get
it's a user group. It's what you said in the comments on the building thing.
Right. It's a chance to work together. It's about working for the common good, and by participating, you might
it's
get
like
something
this breakfast.
Out of it. Yeah.
It's not that different from the breakfast.
We're not sponsored. We're not, you know.
Except it's, you know, bigger and more fluid and lasts longer.
That's interesting.
It's in Palo Alto, which is kind of a nice place. It's far away from here. Where would you put it in Berkeley?
Whose house?
Go rent that office and trash it. How much does it cost to rent an office in Berkeley? I've thought about maybe doing that.
The vacancy rates are down, so private space would be high. Barter for a warehouse. Someplace with Wi-Fi.
What do I have that they want?
I
have a Mac iBook. Actually, we fixed the problem. It turns out creating a new user. And
yeah, I saw that.
What, do you have the same one? You do. It's exactly the same one. How much memory do you have?
Only 768.
And it works pretty good?
Yeah, for what I do, it works fine.
What do you do?
Email, web, FileMaker. I mean, I plug into an external 20-inch screen for what I want, you know, dual screen. There's actually an Apple script called Screen Spanner that will let you have not just one screen, but two virtual monitors set aside.
Oh, those are good. What do you call those?
That lets you have a window stretching across two screens or have just separate stuff on the different screens as opposed to.
So how do you plug the other screen in? Where is the interface?
VGA adapter right off.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah.
Are you running Tiger?
I'm not running Tiger.
Do you run Dashboard Mac?
I've got Dashboard, but darn if I've ever really used it. I mean,
whenever I lock it, it seems like it takes about 100 or 200 megs.
It does seem like it's resource intensive for these systems, but hey, I mean, Apple sells boxes, so they have to keep upgrading the OS to use more resources.
Yeah.
100 megs for an OS, that is so incredible.
It's much more than that.
Oh, okay. Well, it's so much more incredible.
They're
talking about it.
Yeah. I mean, that's a lot of people think that's the minimum for the current Mac OS.
Well, how much do you actually use, you know?
Well, the OS isn't using a gigabyte.
But it will if you give it to it, though.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
But Dashboard, I think, I also find, because so many of the tools are net-based, they'll wait and do queries and do generate transactions.
Is it heavy? Does it take?
Just heavy in terms of performance. Yeah.
Are you using the current now up to date?
I have been running the old one, but I'm not doing the network stuff.
You're becoming a champion of women's cause and technology?
I'm sorry?
Yeah, I'm running the old one also.
I said, are you becoming a champion or an investigative person for women?
I think 453 is the last. But it's
whatever is interesting right now.
I'm talking about switching to the iCal and other net-based tools that integrate more. But I've got, you know, years of history in this.
What is that?
Now up to date, a great calendaring tool that we're sharing. And so,
I purchased Tuckspace from Guy Kawasaki at a BMUG meeting.
Oh, right.
And that evolved into, it eventually got me into Now Up to Date.
So. And now contact.
Yeah.
So they don't have a way to export that to
I can export it, but there's
there's link data, there's other stuff that probably wouldn't come out cleanly in the export. It's nice to be able to go back 5 years and say, what was I doing?
That's what my blog is for.
Sometimes I get more obsessive and actually put work time and other stuff on it until it fills out.
So what's one feature that you think I probably don't know about that I should know about in Mac, in the current Mac OS?
Feature that you probably don't know about.
Like some hidden keystroke or some really useful command. Or
the thing that I'm still retraining myself to the new interface. In general, like in mail or any number of Apple apps, I'll be looking for the add mailbox command rather than instinctively going for the plus that's right there.
I haven't figured out how to use that yet. I use Gmail and Yahoo Mail, and I still use my Windows machine for Outlook Express, but almost everything I get to is spam now.
Right.
So it's like, eventually I'll probably just shut it off. I don't think I want that kind of mail anymore. You know?
The whole download and...
Yeah, I think I like web-based mail much better.
Well, the nice thing with Gmail, it lets you do the pop download in addition, so it doesn't go away on Gmail. So this gives me the portable copy of it.
Is that what you're using primarily, is Gmail?
No, but it's one of my 10 accounts up here.
Oh, wow, you have 10 accounts.
Those are just the primary. There's lots more aliases.
And every time you check email, it checks all those?
Yeah, and however I can, if I'm looking for something particular or have a low bandwidth connection, like over a cell phone, cellular data, and I'm paying for every byte, I can tell it to just check the one account that's important.
Do you have a cellular in there right now?
This one doesn't have the Bluetooth built in, so I pop in a Bluetooth USB dongle.
What's your, Bluetooth would connect to the...
Yeah, through Singular.
Through your cell phone?
Yeah. And so anywhere where I have cell
connection. I have a cell phone too.
Yeah.
How much does that cost?
It adds up. I used it a bunch the first month on this service where it was unlimited, but it's by the bytes, you know, or by the K.
So it's very expensive.
It does. T-Mobile, they had a $20 all-you-can-eat plan.
Oh, is it? Oh. Because I have T-Mobile.
Not T-Mobile for a cell carrier?
No, I have T-Mobile for Starbucks.
Happened to be the same provider. It's you know, the Wi-Fi service is different, although they market it in ways to...
I see, but the one account doesn't work for the other?
No, but there might be a discount on the other if you buy both.
One of these years, they'll get all this shit straightened out and make it easy.
I mean, it should be seamless and easy, and people are working on integrating it. So I can check this one account. But the key thing I do is every website or every list I'm on, I use a different alias so that if it starts to get spammed, I can shut that off and change that one and also filter on that so I'm only looking for stuff with that headers in that list.
So Rains, I just saw this thing called for Ralph. I don't know who that is. Ralph. What was I going to say? Do you have a net connection right now?
I do not have a net connection right now. If
they
I
don't have Wi-Fi here?
They do not have Wi-Fi here, or rather they have a private network for their own use.
Oh, that's a bummer. You'd think restaurant in Berkeley would get with it.
Well, we've talked about that, but you know, here we are. I notice it's a Thursday morning, and the tables are almost full. We're a part of that, but
so do they really need Wi-Fi?
They don't need Wi-Fi, they don't need people to hang around and occupy tables. They'd rather increase the turn rate to deliver quality experience and then see people on their way.
So, what's your favorite restaurant in Berkeley?
Favorite restaurant.
All right, what's your favorite?
Okay, well, favorite restaurant in Berkeley, let's see. Used to be the 4th Street Grill, but that's changed just a couple times over the past 20 years. Santa Fe is gone. Homemade Cafe is probably...
Where is that?
My neighborhood corner breakfast spot at Dwight in Sacramento. And not very nice, very... very
healthy and substantial meals.
That was working in San Francisco.
Good quality breakfast and lunch. Chez Panisse is up there, but that's not an everyday sort of visit.
It's a little expensive, eh?
Special occasion. It's there. What else? I mean, Saul's is sort of a favorite to come to these breakfasts. The B-Mug, even though B-Mug meetings aren't happening anymore, they haven't been for years, the dinner after the meeting still happens every Thursday night at Taiwan Restaurant right next
really?
To McDonald's.
You
yeah.
go?
Sometimes. At 9:30 at night, so as though there were a meeting, people then get together for dinner.
Why not have the B-Mug? Why not have more B-Mug meetings?
Well, there's E-Mug is revived, but you know, the core group went to just a virtual community, the Planet Mug First Class PBS. And that was really illumination.
Maybe we should start a users group of some kind in Berkeley.
Yeah.
Like a bloggers meetup.
Yeah, that would be a bad
thing. We did this in Cambridge, and it was actually, I thought it was really good.
Oh, yeah, I really enjoyed the accounts of it. And,
yeah. I mean, it wasn't exactly like a users group.
No.
Because we did projects.
Right.
And,
the user groups don't have to be, you know, sit down in a formal demo and formal Q&A, but
right.
whatever format works.
Well, let me ask you this. You were at the BloggerCon at Stanford?
Yes, I was. Not the whole thing, but most of
no?
it.
So you know what a BloggerCon is?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Do you think a BloggerCon would work in Berkeley?
A BloggerCon would totally work in Berkeley.
You want to do one?
I'd love to do one.
Oh, well, that was easy.
I'd love to be part of doing one.
Yeah, obviously. I'm interested. I mean, where would you put it? Can you get a room? Can you get like four rooms at the university on a Saturday?
On a Saturday, probably through Jeff or his connections with Sims or other people with
Jeff
Dubois? Yes.
He has connections with Sims?
Yes. He or some other people I know.
Well, let's start asking that question.
Yeah, campus wouldn't be bad, but there's also some advantages to being off campus. Some more flexibility.
Well, the rooms, the facilities,
yes.
Like where would you put it off campus?
Well, that's to actually sustain BloggerCon with parallel sessions.
You kind of need
yeah.
the facilities of a campus. You know, and
either that or a convention center type thing that you're not paying for.
Well, yeah. You see, there's the problem.
Right.
You usually have to pay for stuff like that. And then once you have to pay, then you have to have sponsors.
Uh-huh.
And once you have sponsors, they start making demands.
Of course.
And once they start making demands, you have to not either give them what they want or not.
Right.
If you give them what they want, it's not a BloggerCon anymore.
Right.
So it's sort of like you're caught there. You can't really do it. So the university's the best. Plus, people feel more comfortable coming to something like that.
It's
at
a neutral
university.
Space, and it's all about sharing and collaboration.
And it adds a certain, it adds a
prestige,
a quality to it,
yeah.
a prestige. It didn't hurt at all to have the first couple ones at Harvard.
Right.
I mean, it felt people felt like they were going to something special, and it made the thing somewhat special.
And in partnership with Sims, they could get a lot out of that too.
Yeah. Except right. I don't know anybody at Sims though. So that would be a good thing a good dialogue to open up.
Definitely.
Maybe somebody at Sims will listen to this. This is already 56 minutes long.
Well, hey, if anybody's still listening.
Oh, they're still listening. So
call now.
What's your number?
Operators are waiting by.
Give them a number.
You can call 510-315-0431. That's area code 510-315-0431.
And ask for Rains?
That'll ring straight to me.
There you go.
It's a temporary Vonage number that I'm using for marketing my co-housing condo.
Excellent.
So,
well, if you want to buy a co-housing condo.
Downtown Oakland, 12 minutes from San Francisco, closer than most neighborhoods.
Is it really?
Yeah. I mean, most places in San Francisco would take you more than 12 minutes to get downtown.
12 minutes because it's right on the BART?
Yes, exactly.
And it really takes 12 minutes to get to San
I've timed it.
I bet you have.
It was even better when I lived one stop further at Fruitvale. It took 17 minutes, but I could actually see a train coming and run and catch it.
How long do you usually have to wait for one?
Since it's the main station, it's 5 to 7 minutes during rush hour. And they're very.
Do you get a seat during rush hour? But for 12 minutes, who cares?
Often you can because a lot of people are getting out there. And so some of the trains are more local, you know, coming from Richmond, and so less crowded.
Interesting.
So, especially Berkeley, you know, a distance where people could come from San Francisco back to BloggerCon and walk up to campus.
I also want to have a one-day conference about RSS. But that's probably a separate issue.
The Hillside Club might be a good spot for that.
I don't know. Maybe it would. Yeah. It's only $400 for a day. It's pretty cheap. I would probably want to do that at a university too, though.
Yeah.
I like universities.
Yeah,
Stanford probably for that one. A BloggerCon at Berkeley, that would be nice. Berkeley, because it's got all the great restaurants and everything's within walking distance. You know, whereas at Stanford, it's not. That was kind of the problem.
You had to drive
to get somewhere.
I mean, this is part of why I'm into co-housing, because it's getting away from the car culture. You know, figure out ways to leave the cars.
Now, Berkeley is very much not a car culture place.
Right.
In my experience, at least. I don't drive very much at all. I can get everything.
You were just writing about that.
It's true. I do almost everything by walking. Even getting groceries, I do by walking.
There's a bicycle delivery service, Pedal Express. So if you order a book from Cody's instead of Amazon, you can get it delivered often same day. But without,
you know that. Do they deliver Max that way?
If you pay them, they could. They can carry up to 1,000 pounds. So yes,
a bike can carry 1,000.
These are cargo bikes with serious trailers. I moved from Oakland to Berkeley by bicycle.
You did not.
Yeah, a bed, a roll top desk, refrigerator.
What?
I had a quadruped, two recumbent bicycles side by side, so two people pedaling. I have a picture of Sylvia doing this.
You are awesome, Rains. You're what we call fanatic, I think.
Oh, totally. But I mean, there's some places like this. I just go for places where there's maximum leverage for maximum fun, where you draw the communities together and connect people in unexpected ways.
Like moving a roll top desk in a bed on a bicycle.
It was a flat route, just a few miles. And
don't take the glory out of it. I mean,
I wouldn't probably have tried to do it if I were moving up into the hill. Maybe moving downhill.
That must have been quite a sight.
Oh yeah.
Did people take pictures?
I got some pictures. The fun part is, because this thing is taking up the whole lane, cars actually respect it and give it space, as opposed to a bike where they try to squeeze you out.
You know, I noticed that cars around here do not respect pedestrians. It's really appalling. Like, you try to get across Shattuck, you're standing in the crosswalk, and you always have to take your life in your own hands to cross. They won't stop until you're actually blocking their path and then showing that somehow you're not going to move.
I grew up near Boston, so I know what that's like.
Well, Cambridge is perfect. Cambridge, they do.
Cambridge, it's crossed over the threshold, but I always think of
the rest of Boston is totally screwed up. And New York is totally screwed up, right? Right. Almost in Florida, forget it. They don't even know. I was in Greensboro, North Carolina, and they literally don't even acknowledge that you are there. I mean, they have to actually be almost about to kill you before they stop. You know, if I die on the streets of Berkeley, that's probably going to be the reason why.
There was actually just on Daily Coast this morning, somebody was reporting that Fitzgerald rented a new office across the street from his existing one. And so that was exciting news, that he had sluiced out. But then I also saw that he was in the hospital, having been hit by the car while walking across the street in the crosswalk. So I just wonder if he was staring at the numbers too much, scoping things out. And
All right, folks, we're leaving now. This has been Morning Coffee Notes, 1 hour, 1 minute, and 55 seconds worth. So don't say you didn't get your money's worth today. I've been talking with lots of people, most recently Rains Cohen. Rains is a co-housing guy, and I'll tell you more about Rains if you read about it on Scripting News. Rains says, uh-oh. Don't say uh-oh, it's all right. But we have a great picture of Rains wearing his bicycle outfit. And when I say he's a fanatic, you won't have any doubts.
All things and always, life is about building community. The more fun you can have, the better.
Right on. Okay, very good. Thanks, Rains. And
thank you, Dave.
Thank you, everybody.